Thank you very much. I would like to call this meeting of the Arizona Orthopedic Medical Board of Examiners open in a virtual setting on 9/19/2025 at 9:01 a.m. Can we get a roll call and review of the agenda, Mr. Bohol?
Yes, the meeting is taking place virtually as well as at the 1740 West Adams Building, Phoenix, Arizona, 85021. Roll call, Dr. Cunningham.
Here.
Ms. Pichel?
Here.
Dr. Walker is absent. Mr. Goodman?
Here.
Dr. Shippon?
Present.
Dr. Matem?
Present.
You have a quorum. And for the review of the agenda, I did want to note that we have received four requests from involving four cases with potential conflicts in the afternoon, so they've requested priority. So if possible, before call to the public, could we go to item 11A, which is DO 230125A, Hirsch Jetley?
We may.
Thank you. And I will provide that meeting summary.
Yes, go ahead, please.
The board previously reviewed the application for Hirsch Jetley. The board denied the license at the March meeting. The applicant appealed the denial and requested a formal hearing of the case. During the preparing for the case, a consent agreement was reached between staff and the applicant. The proposed consent agreement would be for the denial of the license and provided a summary of the details surrounding the application and the justification for denial, but the applicant would accept the denial and the case would be resolved. And we are asking for the board to approve the consent agreement for a denial of licensure, as well as vacate the formal hearing in the matter.
And the consent agenda was a change in tone of the wording of the denial?
That's correct, sir.
And did the I was comfortable with the change in language of the denial, but obviously if any of the board members have any concern, if anybody needs any further information on that, Justin can go over that. Did anybody have any questions about that?
Fine.
Good. Well, I'd like to make a motion to accept the consent agenda as you modified.
So moved.
Oh, go ahead, Jean. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry. And Mark, I want to dip in, but motion to accept the consent agreement, not consent agenda.
Sorry.
And to vacate the hearing.
And to vacate the hearing. Yes, thank you very much. Words matter. You're correct, Jean.
And I'll make a so moved on that.
A second.
Perfect. I have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Are there any opposed? If not, all in favor, please indicate with an aye.
Aye.
I apologize again. We need to call because this is a denial will be reported.
That's why we pay the big bucks, Gene. Go ahead, Mr. Bowman.
Thank you. Dr. Cunningham.
Yeah.
Ms. Pichel.
Yes.
Mr. Goodman.
Aye.
Dr. Shippon?
Yes.
Dr. Matem?
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tracy.
Thank you, Tracy. Okay.
And, if we could move on to item 5A, which is actually, I'm sorry, if we could move to item 9A, which is DO 250108A, Stephen Feig. This is agendized both for a summary suspension as well as the acceptance of a consent agreement. Staff was able to obtain a signed consent agreement from Dr. Feig for a full practice restriction pending the outcome of the criminal conviction. So at this time, we're asking for the board to approve that consent agreement and vacate the summary suspension of the license.
That's perfect. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Any discussion or questions from the board on Dr. Key?
No.
If not, I'll take a motion.
So moved.
Do I have a second?
A second.
On the motion as worded by, I'm sorry, was that Eugene?
It was not.
Okay.
But I understand the motion to be to accept the consent agreement.
Correct, yes, thank you. Do I have any further discussion? Any opposed? And do we need a roll call for this, Gene?
Yes, please.
Well, go ahead, Justin.
Okay. Dr. Cunningham?
Yes.
Ms. Bichelle?
Yes.
Mr. Goodman?
Aye.
Dr. Shippon?
Yes.
Dr. Maiden?
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I'd just like to say thank you for all the information you provided. For those observing this, it might seem like we're moving quickly, but there was a lot of information we had to read through before this meeting to be prepared. So please don't think we're taking any of this lightly.
Thank you, Dr. Maiden. If we could move on to item 9B, which is DO 250127A, Travis Stiegler, DO. The case agenda is both for summary suspension of the license as well as for the acceptance of a consent agreement. Staff was able to obtain a consent agreement, an interim consent agreement for a full practice restriction and an evaluation. The doctor has agreed to sign that agreement and has submitted the signed agreement. The evaluation would come back before the board, and the board would consider the evaluation results to make the final adjudication on the case. So at this time, we're asking for the board to accept the proposed consent agreement and vacate the summary suspension hearing.
Any further discussion or questions for Mr. Bohol?
Mr. Bohol, I just had one question. For the evaluation, are you giving them a certain amount of time that has to be done within 90 days, or is that in part of this agreement as well, too? That was my only question.
That's correct, yes. They have a limited time, and it has to be a board-approved evaluator. And if they want somebody off the list, they have to submit documentation for review of that individual.
That was my only question. Thank
Perfect.
You.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Do I have a second?
A second.
I'll give a second to Dr. Goodman. Any further discussion? And roll call, please, Mr. Bohol.
Yep.
Learning, Ms. Galvin.
Sorry, Dr. Cunningham.
Yes.
Ms. Bichelle.
You're muted, Ms. Bichelle. Still muted. Sorry.
Yes.
There we go. Mr. Goodman.
Aye.
Dr. Shippon.
Yes.
Dr. Maiden.
Aye.
Okay. Motion carries. The consent agreement is accepted. The last one is if we could go to 7C,
yes,
which is case number DO 250149A. And DO, oh, I apologize. if we could go to 10A, which is DO 240087A, Simone Rockland, DO. I believe the doctor and her attorney are present.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah. So this is an appeal of the board's May 30th, 2025 order. The details of the appeal are submitted by Mr. Flynn Carey. Mr. Carey, did you have anything that you wanted to discuss before I provide a brief summary of the case and the appeal?
No, Justin, I'm fine with just giving comments once you've done your case presentation, if that's okay.
Perfect, that's fine.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The board issued a disciplinary order for administrative warning, as well as disciplinary order for CME to Dr. Simone Rockland on May 30th, 2025. The board alleged that the medical records were insufficient regarding the patient's operative report, failed to adequately detail the procedure performed, and did not contain the reasoning or thought process for the inoperative variance between the preoperative plan, the informed consent, and actual procedure. Patients, with respect to patient's failure to document that she received VK's prior informed consent to have medical students observe the surgery, the board acknowledged that while such consent is commonplace for many practitioners and healthcare centers, neither the board's practice act nor rules explicitly require the same. So the order was requiring 10 hours of board-approved medical education in record keeping to be completed within 90 days, as well as a administrative warning. The licensee has appealed, citing concerns with the processing of the hearing, noting that a document was sent to the board but was not provided to the board members until the morning of the meeting. And so because of that and other items that they have concerns with in the order, they have requested an appeal. The board's purview today is to determine if they will accept the motion for appeal and conduct a rehearing in the investigative hearing, make a modification to the proposed order, or deny the appeal.
If I may, Justin, just to clarify for the board, while technically Mr. Carey and his client are essentially, you know, asking for an appeal, they are seeking a rehearing or a review under the board's rules. And there are 7 grounds or so upon which a rehearing or review is based. And Mr. Carey has articulated his basis in his request. And if you decide to, what you have to do today is just decide whether you're going to grant that request for rehearing or reconsideration. And if you do grant that request, we will have that rehearing or reconsideration at a later board meeting.
Thank you, Ms. Galvin. I have a quick question for you, Ms. Galvin. I'm sorry, if you want to speak first, Mr. Carey.
I had a question actually for Jean as well before I made a presentation. I was just curious, Jeannie, if they do make a modification, are they allowed to do it in this meeting? I know Allopathic will, if they grant a review, they'll do it live at the same time. So just from a procedural perspective, I was hoping just because I haven't encountered this with your board, with the DO board.
This board, in my experience, will take the question of whether to grant the rehearing or review, and if it's granted at a future meeting, conduct that rehearing or review.
Very well. Thank you.
Ms. Galvin, a question for you. I do not have a problem with holding our board accountable with how we do business. Although I was comfortable reviewing a document same day, I typically prefer to do so long before and a chance to reread as needed. So I do not have a problem personally with a request for review or rehearing or whatever the wordage was there. But have we done that before? We have not during my time.
We have done rehearings of matters before.
Okay. Questions from the other board members?
So if I may, I believe, and Mr. Carey, you could speak to this, but there were additional grounds, not just the fact that the response wasn't distributed to you until that morning of the meeting. There are other grounds, and if you are inclined to grant his request, you would need to specify which grounds or issues you are going to review at a future meeting.
Well, before we move on with questions from the board, would you care to review that? I have a chance to review your documents. I appreciate it. But, Mr. Carey, I'd appreciate it if you would speak up now.
Of course. You know, obviously it sounds like from the chair's discussion, the sort of the last minute presentation of the other expert may have been an irregularity. I think I put up this in a footnote. I don't attribute any bad intent to anyone on that. I think it was just something that slipped through the cracks, but it did create a procedural error. And so that was one basis. But the other bases, first of all, the board voted at the board meeting to do two things, to actually issue a letter of concern on the male student being present, but then also included that in its findings under section, I believe it was section 8, paragraph 8. And it kind of it creates an issue that it's mentioned. I'm sorry, it's paragraph 9. But it creates an issue because the purpose of an LOC is when there is not sufficient evidence to seek a violation or find a violation. So we have an LOC that says, hey, there wasn't enough evidence on this male student being present. At the same time, there's a entry in the LOC that, or in the order that specifically references the failure to get informed consent for a student, and so it creates something of a conflict between the two. The other basis, and I did incorrectly say striking paragraph 8, it's actually paragraph 9 that needed to be struck. The other issue too is that there is findings not supported by the evidence. Specifically, there's a finding in paragraph 5 that Dr. Rockland assured that there would be no scar. That actually is contradicted by the OMC. The OMC noted that the patient acknowledged that there was a lot of different discussion of different operations for the lift. There's also the fact that there was a number of consents that we exerted that explicitly authorized other incisions, implants, or treatments, intraoperative modification for unforeseen conditions, and a number of other paragraphs that talk about the need for professional judgment. I note that our expert indicated that modification was required in this case in order to meet the standard of care because the client's number one concern in this case was the settling of the breast tissue or the settling of the implants, which had not occurred in the previous surgery conducted by someone else. And so she had to make an intraoperative decision. We also provided unquestioned or unchallenged evidence of a silent rupture, which is one that cannot be detected until you're actually in the body cavity. So I think the issue on this that we challenged for the findings not being supported by the evidence was the fact that there was the standard of care met. What happened here is two different experts who had a disagreement about what type of procedure should have been committed. And we also have an OMC, your OMC, indicating that almost all suggestions of deviation pertain to physician documentation, something that we're not fighting the board on, that there were some documentation deficiencies. With all of that, then we get to the penalty, and our position is that typically this board, when it comes to documentation, it tends to, and again, you have discretion, but it tends to, when it is correct documentation, just incomplete, go more non-disciplinary. When it tends to be false documentation, someone actively doing something improper, that's where you tend to more utilize your disciplinary powers. So we've acknowledged that there are some shortcomings in the documentation, but we also argued that there was an excessive penalty. So all told, we made arguments regarding the procedural irregularity that Dr. Matem initially cited to, concerns with the findings not supported by evidence, the excessive/contradictory penalty related to the male student being present while also issuing the LOC, and then just overall the issue related to the penalty in a case where we suggest that a non-disciplinary penalty would have been more appropriate. So we would ask that all of those grounds be bases for review/rehearing. Again, just to clarify, I think I did typo. I indicated we need to strike paragraph 5 and 8. It's actually would be paragraph 5 and 9 would be the two that I think are the problematic ones that I've referenced here.
Thank you very much, Mr. Flynn. I appreciate it. So questions from the board.
Gene, I just have a question. I wasn't there for that hearing for this particular case, so should I recuse myself for this, for voting on this?
You do not, because you have been provided the record, and if you do grant the motion, you will have that information in front of you again at that next meeting.
Okay. I feel very comfortable. I reviewed everything. So I feel very comfortable voting. I just want to make sure procedurally that I have not misstepped.
Thank you, Dr. Cunningham. Other questions from the board?
So if you are inclined to grant the motion for rehearing or reconsideration, a motion might be to grant the motion for rehearing, reconsideration on all four bases set forth in the motion.
I don't have a problem with the rehearing. I don't know if any other board members do. So I'm in favor of moving forward with that. If Dr. Maidem, if you feel okay with that.
So my question to the board is if all four points are of concern. Personally, I believe we opined on the case greatly on all matters, and the only matter that I believe needs to be considered is procedural inefficiency, I'll call it. Maybe errors, correct, Mr. Flynn. Either way, we'll call it a synonym, as far as not providing adequate documentation beforehand. When we don't have enough time to consider, and I, like I said, prefer a lot of time to review these cases and consider, I think it might affect our judgment here. So my only consideration for rehearing or reconsideration would be on the procedural irregularity. And I'm willing to make that as a motion.
I'll second that, Dr. Maidem.
Okay. Just to be clear, we did have a motion on the floor by Dr. Cunningham.
Oh, no, it wasn't a motion. It was just our saying in favor.
Okay.
Moving forward. I'm sorry, Gene. I'm sorry, Gene. I didn't mean to jump the gun there.
I wouldn't step on Dr. Cunningham. Thank you. Do I have a second on that?
Dr. Cunningham, yes, second.
Any further discussion on the matter? Gene, for a rehearing, do I need a roll call?
You do not.
Oh, very good. Any opposed? And all in favor, please indicate with an aye.
Aye.
Thank you. I believe motion carried, unless I missed any ayes there, Mr. Bohol.
You did not.
Okay. Thank you. I really appreciate the information you sent us, Mr. Carey. It's very helpful to be able to go through this, and I apologize for the prior. We'll always take your cases seriously.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Of course.
And now if we could go to item 7C, which is DO 250149A and DO 250150A, Brittany Woodall, applicant for initial licensure. I believe the doctor and her attorney are present, and Ms. Castro will provide the summary.
Dr. Woodall has applied for licensure May 12th of 2025. Dr. Woodall previously applied for a PGT permit in 2020. On the application, Dr. Woodall disclosed receiving a DUI in 2017. The board reviewed the application and issued the permit August 15th of 2020. On or about January 2021, Dr. Woodall's program placed her on suspension between January 2021 and April of 2021 for inappropriate behavior and comments made during patient care. The program provided a performance improvement plan for Dr. Woodall and listed the following concerns. Dr. Woodall was placed on an educational enhancement program January 4th of 21 to address her poor performance regarding clinical expression of knowledge on the hand and upper extremity orthopedic surgery rotation. This program was halted January 14th when Dr. Woodall was immediately suspended from patient care due to the incident described below. The reported unethical conduct incident was January 8, 2021. It was reported that Dr. Woodall demonstrated inappropriate behavior and comments during patient care with several staff members present and directly in front of the patient in the operating room. The patient voiced concern and acknowledges the comment. This incident was verified by Dr. Woodall, in which she did not deny the incident but did apologize. The patient was brought into the OR by anesthesia and an RN. Dr. Woodall was speaking loudly and swearing. The RN asked her to stop because the patient was still awake. Dr. Woodall replied, quote, "She has dementia. It's not like she's going to effing remember anyway," end quote. The nurse and anesthesia remained at the head of the bed and reassured the patient that she was going to be well cared for. The patient replied, "It doesn't sound like it." Dr. Woodall did not stop her loud and inappropriate conversation. It was I verified this with all of the staff in the room at the time. I also filled out the form and placed it in her envelope. This is a statement signed by Jennifer Burke, Perioptic Services Nurse Manager. Dr. Woodall has received unsatisfactory evaluations regarding her interpersonal communication and professionalism. Dr. Woodall previously applied for a full license in Arizona. The board reviewed the application for licensure, the renewal of the PGT permit, and the conduct above at its meeting on March 26th of 2022. In that meeting, Dr. Woodall was present, and the board issued an interim order for an evaluation with a fitness for duty component. Board staff notes unprofessional communication and outbursts, including swearing at staff in their interactions with Dr. Woodall. Additionally, staff notes that the program, Mountain View Regional Medical Center, who placed Dr. Woodall on suspension in 2021, has refused to complete the conduct portion of the board's postgraduate training permit verification form. This portion includes questions regarding leave of absence, discipline, probation, investigations, and substance abuse monitoring. They have stated that Mountain View has a neutral reference policy and will not answer the board's questions on the prescribed form. The board can determine if the verification received is acceptable. Additionally, staff has additional information that can be reviewed in executive session if you would like to do that.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Ms. Kester. And do we have the doctor or representative here, Mr. Boho?
Yes, I believe the applicant, Dr. Woodall, is present, as well as Michael Rain as her attorney.
Oh, perfect. Dr. Woodall, I'm sorry, Mr. Bohal, I don't need to swear them in for application, or do I?
You do not.
Okay. Dr. Woodall or Mr. Rain, would you like to comment?
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. We appreciate the time to appear before you today. This incident arising 4 years ago now can be summed up essentially as Ms. Woodall making inappropriate comments using inappropriate language during her training program. At that time, it was addressed significantly by the residency program. She received a multi-month suspension. She was required to take 12 rehabilitative therapy courses. It was addressed at the time significantly. She ultimately changed residency programs after that, completed her residency. She's obtained licensure in California and practiced without incident ever since. So that is the main issue here today. From board's write-up and from the fact the board had already issued previous approvals after the DUI, 2017 misdemeanor DUI, we don't understand that the DUI was basis for being presented to you any longer, but we can address that with you today if you would like. But essentially, the purpose here, we believe, is to determine whether she was fit to practice. That's what she did back in 2022. It ultimately took a different turn, but as she comes back 3 to 4 years later, she has engaged in the psychological evaluation. That report has come in. Now, we believe that the board staff's memo that summarized that evaluation was quite incomplete. It pointed to one single sentence in the evaluation that tended to suggest that perhaps we think the implication was that she may require monitoring. But we would ask you, of course, we know you have, to review the entire evaluation, which unquestionably concludes that Dr. Woodall is currently fit to practice without restrictions. Some of the important quotes that were not included in the report include.
Excuse me, Mr. Rain, if you're going to quote directly from the evaluation and the board may have questions, we should go into executive session.
And we'll do that soon, Mr. Rain, but please, if there's anything you need to discuss in open session, do so now.
I do not plan to share any confidential patient information in any of these quotes. It's just the fact of her conclusion, which I think needs to happen in open session. So I'm not concerned about it. I know Dr. Woodall and I have discussed it, so we don't believe we need executive session for what I'm going to share with you.
And Dr. Woodall, if there's anything that Mr. Rain comments on that you believe is personal or confidential, please speak up.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Continue, Mr. Rain.
Yeah, thank you. And we appreciate the concern. We really do. But Dr. Woodall, in terms of whether there was any underlying disorder, and the reason it's not confidential is because the evaluator's conclusion is that she fell within the range, a normal range, that would not suggest the presence of psychological disorder when cleared, compared to a clinical population. No underlying disorder. Dr. Woodall's scores fell within the range that would not indicate problems or symptoms that would be considered unusual in the general population or indicative of clinical significance. Quote, Dr. Woodall appears, open to attending counseling sessions, and she's attended them on her own when feeling stressed. And she didn't discuss the evaluator, the benefit that people can receive from treatment, but she indicated that any treatment should be up to the discretion of her treating provider, who could decide when treatment is no longer required. And quote, it is not recommended that any other information is shared between a treating provider and the board. In addition, testing revealed that Dr. Woodall has no remarkable or significant psychopathology that would suggest she's unable to perform her duties as an osteopathic surgeon. While the evaluator went on to say that there was the incidence of crude jokes and language that may offend others back 4 years ago, quote, this does not mean she cannot perform her job duties. It is not recommended that Dr. Woodall have any work restrictions at this time. So with those conclusions, in terms of trying to determine whether an applicant is fit to practice, the method is you go get the evaluation, and that evaluation has unquestionably determined that she is currently fit to practice. And I think those in the meeting can appreciate that. While in training, during which the purpose is to become a professional, to learn how to be a professional, both in the clinical setting and just as an employee or a supervisor or, you know, the career that one will have once they become licensed, the purpose is to learn, and we know you understand that. And it was dealt with as such. In the program, it was handled with a significant remedy and rehabilitation. And so the law that you need to review in regard to whether you can order a monitoring or determine that she's unfit to practice, it's 32.18.22A7. And that requires that you would determine that she is physically, mentally, or emotionally unable to practice medicine. I mean, the fact that she's been licensed in California and practicing without monitoring an incident is a critical factor there that should give you some comfort, in addition to the evaluator's clear recommendation that she is not suffering from any sort of psychopathology or that she is not currently unfit to practice. And so we would ask that you see what we think is relatively clear, that this is not a person, because 3 years ago, 4 years ago, on this instance, had used inappropriate language. And Dr. Woodall is here to answer any questions you may have about that. She has learned, of course, from that significant outcome and the significant detour that it put towards her starting her career. She, of course, appreciates the impropriety of the words she used on that incident 4 years ago and is happy to discuss that with you. I do want to briefly address that, additional discipline that would arise would be generally under your law that says engaging in any conduct that constitutes unprofessional conduct may be grounds for denial of a license. But that law goes on further and it says unless rehabilitated, right? And so there's a handful of laws that in the board staff's memo has cited, you know, that conduct 4 years ago may have implicated unprofessional conduct. We may dispute some of those, but there's this overarching law that says if you're going to say unprofessional conduct occurred that may be grounds for denying a license, you also should look to see if that licensee had been rehabilitated. And as I noted, when this happened 4 years ago, while in training, the residency program took action to do that rehabilitation. It punished her significantly with a 3-month suspension and with the ongoing rehabilitative therapies that they required her to take. She ultimately went and changed residency programs. The new residency program was fully aware of these issues. She discussed them with them, and has never had an incident in the several years that have passed. So we believe that the evidence is clearly there that if there was unprofessional conduct, and we can accept for this discussion that the inappropriate language would have amounted to unprofessional conduct if it occurred in this state. We hope that you can see with the passage of 4 years with the punishment that she received at the time and the rehabilitation that she received at the time. And now with a psychological evaluation saying she's currently fit to practice, it would be an extreme remedy to either deny her a license in this state when she's licensed already and others and practicing without incident, or to require her to take discipline on the way in and be monitored, because the only basis you have to offer a probationary license under monitoring is unfitness to practice. And while in training 4 years ago, she made inappropriate comments and she had learned greatly for them. But I would hazard a guess that the folks on this Zoom can appreciate that does not amount to someone who is just mentally incapable of safely practicing medicine at this time, so far down the road and after all that rehabilitation work. So we would ask you to grant this license without condition. But to the extent you feel, you know, that you would like to address this, there's been a long process, there's been an evaluation. Of course, you have lesser options that aren't so impactful for staying, you know, Ms. Woodall's license, such as, you know, your non-disciplinary letter of concern or some non-disciplinary continuing education. To the extent you wanted to order something like that, we would understand, and it would be an acceptable resolution for Ms. Woodall, Dr. Woodall. We do take one issue with the comments in the board's presentation, which was an allegation that 3 years ago Ms. Woodall had used inappropriate language with board staff. She doesn't agree with that. She hasn't spoken with board staff in that way in 3 years, and so she did not agree that happened. But to the extent it did, it would fall under the same concepts, we believe, of something that has happened quite a long time ago, and that. While we have not wanted to get into these issues here today at the board, we do know that there is an ongoing dialogue with the Arizona Ombudsman's Office, who is currently investigating the board's staff for its inappropriate interactions and its communication failures. And really all of that can just be done for today's purposes. We understand that interactions between Dr. Woodall and board staff have had their issues over the years, and we would just assert that there is literally an investigation of the board staff for that. But all of it occurring 3 years ago, we hope that you can see that there is there's enough time and enough rehabilitation between then and now that we hope you can see that she's currently fit to practice and offer her this license without condition over the non-disciplinary order. And I've gone on and on long enough. I'd like to open it up for any questions that you may have about for myself. Thank you.
Great. Thank you for that very, very detailed response there, Mr. Rain. Is there anything else you'd like to add, Dr. Woodall?
No, that was a very good summary.
Thank you. Any questions from the board in open session?
I have a question.
I just wanted to clarify something. Just in something that Mr. Rain said, he stated that the swearing at staff occurred 3 years ago. It did occur 3 years ago, but it also occurred during this current application process. And I have confirmed that with staff.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Mr. Goodman, please.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Woodall, Mr. Rain, for being here. Appreciate that information. Am I to understand from all of that, Dr. Woodall, you are mentally and psychologically able to practice, but you're just mean?
That's a fair assessment.
Thank you for your candidness.
Any other questions from the board? Go ahead,
Dr. Cunningham. I had some questions that I'd just like to ask if we're going to go into executive session to ask the doctor. I don't know if other board members do or not, but that would be my only thing is if there's no other question, I'd like to go to executive session for privacy of the physician, ask her some personal questions about her mental status and stuff.
And potential legal advice, Dr. Cunningham?
And potential legal advice from Jean, of course. I could always use her input.
I'll second that. Any opposed to moving to executive session? All in favor, please say aye.
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 Thank you. So, Mr. Rain, Dr. Woodall, we're going to move you to a executive session room. Look for that link on your screen.
all five board members are present, if you'd like to resume the meeting.
Thank you. I'd like to resume the meeting, and thank you for everybody in attendance for their patience. We take our privacy seriously, as well as each and every case very seriously, and this does certainly take some time. That being said, we always do appreciate it when our attorneys and representatives for the doctors can be concise, something to consider in the future. Do we have any other questions or comments from the board?
No.
Dr. Cunningham?
I just wanted to say that, and I wanted to do it in open session, that Dr. Woodall, we want you to be successful. And so I think that when we went, you know, we're held to a higher standard being as physicians. I know that the evaluation said to the general public that you were fine, but we are held to a higher standard. I do think that our patients and even staff at hospital look up to us. And if we have that moment where we misstep in, then I do think then it doesn't look good on you. And like I said, you are a person that we want to have in practice for many years. I want you to be successful. I want patients to think the very best of you. I want staff to think the very best of you. And so that being said, unless other board members have something to say, I'd like to make a motion.
I would just like to make one other comment before you do that, Dr. Cunningham. I appreciate it. Dr. Woodall, as physicians, and especially osteopathic physicians, it is so important, as Dr. Cunningham said, to be respectful. And patients put their trust in us. They rely on us to do the right thing for them. They have to have trust that we will do the right thing, even if they don't understand it, or especially in your case. And that's what I want to emphasize. When somebody is willing to go to the operating room and be put under general anesthesia and have no ability to defend themselves or know what's going on. And I know that's not the case that was discussed in this case, but it was in the operating room. Anytime somebody goes to the operating room, we expect you to be respectful. When somebody is under the influence of anesthesia, put under, we expect you to treat them as a complete human being with respect. It is not acceptable to physically or verbally demean a patient or say anything disrespectful when somebody can't defend themselves because they're under anesthesia, or even if you think it's because of a medical problem such as dementia. This is not the kind of behavior that is accepted in our profession and will not be tolerated. I apologize, Dr. Cunningham, for that. Would you please go ahead?
Thank you very much for explaining
that. I agree.
Dr. Woodall, I appreciate that. Go ahead, Dr. Cunningham.
Yeah, I appreciate what you said, Dr. Maynard. I agree with you 100%. And that being said, I'd like to make a motion for a letter of concern for unprofessional communication with staff. And there were four other things there, I believe, too. Gene, could you help me with that? Is Gene there? Did we lose her?
I am here.
Okay.
The concern that I heard during open session was her, Dr. Woodall's use of language, inappropriate interaction with staff in the OR that was overheard by a patient.
That's correct. And the unprofessional communication. So that would be my motion, Dr. Maiden.
Thank you very much, Dr. Cunningham. Do I have a second?
Could I ask for an amendment on that motion?
Sure,
or the
sure.
Letter of concern?
Uncle, please do.
Thank you. I second the motion, but would like the amendment that in that letter of concern that we also express concern that this is it could be that you are reformed, Dr. Woodall, and that's great. It could also be that you've just gotten better at not saying it around the wrong people. And that is a concern of mine personally. And I think that as a board, I hope we'll go into our letter of concern that, that we are also concerned that this is still a problem. It's just not as expressive as it was before, and that we want to, that we hope that you will, do better. that didn't come out at all like I intended.
How would you like me to add that into the motion? How would you like me to add that, Mr. Goodman? How would you like me to say that?
That our concern is not over just the prior incidents, but that the underlying behavior and feelings towards patients are still present. And I don't know.
That's okay, Mr. Goodman. It would be something the extent of that behavior patterns such as that are not acceptable. We can't regulate feelings, obviously.
Yeah. So I'll accept that to my motion, which Dr. Madam said, and I appreciate what Mr. Goodman said. And Mr. Goodman's already said the second, so Dr. Madam.
Thank you very much, Dr. Cunningham. Is there any further discussion on the motion?
And that motion would include, I'm sorry, Dr.
The motion should preclude to grant an unrestricted license with a letter of concern. I wanted to add.
Exactly.
Correct. Dr. Spine, thanks for bringing us back on track.
Any further discussion on the motion? Thank you, Dr. Chapon. Any opposed? All in favor, please indicate with an aye.
Aye.
Thank you very much, Dr. Woodall. I appreciate you being here and for you being candid. That is very helpful.
Good luck to you, Dr. Woodall. Good luck to you.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you. Mr. Boho, where would you like to move to next?
If we could go back to call to the public and the introduction of the medical students. I know they had patiently been waiting, but they are listening. They did see everything beforehand. So
absolutely. Item three, call to the public. We'd like to welcome the medical students, Midwestern University, College of Osteopathic Medicine, and A.T. Still University School of Osteopathic Medicine in Arizona. We really appreciate the students being here. This is a significant learning experience and your chance to see what it's like later on in life, or hopefully not participate with this later on in life. But I'd just like to emphasize the board staff is available when you have questions, and we'll have some questions for you in just a little bit too, so please continue to pay attention. Item B, do we have any members of the public who wish to speak?
No one has signed in to speak.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Mr. Bohal. I think we can move on to item four, review, consideration, and approval of the minutes.
Mr. Bohal, Randy Yavitz. I wrote to the board before the meeting that we had two members of the public that wanted to speak with respect to Cyrus Bowers. My name is Randy Yavitz. I'm his attorney. And the two members of the public that we indicated would like to speak are Neil Jensen, who is the CEO of Cobra Valley Regional Medical Center, past president of the Arizona Hospital Association, and secondly, Dr. Jody Daggett, who's chief of staff of Cobra Valley Regional Medical Center. They're both standing by and ready to speak. I'm sorry, since this wasn't an in-person meeting, we didn't have a sign-up sheet, but I did write in advance. And I think that Irma Dominic can confirm that.
Mr. Bowman, do you have confirmation of that?
Yes, I think we can go ahead and proceed and have them present.
Thank you very much. And I'm sorry, it's Mr. Yavitz. Am I saying your name close to correct?
Yes, you're saying it perfectly correct.
Oh, good. I hate to slaughter names. I apologize for that. We try to keep this meeting correct and proper here. Mr. Bohal, if I remember correctly, members of the public can speak on a case on the agenda as long as they're not the respondent or licensee, and have up to 3 minutes to present.
That's correct.
All right. I'd like to make sure I remember my rules close to correctly. Mr. Yavitz, you have two persons, you said?
Right. Mr. Jensen, are you still on this call?
I am. Thank you.
Please go ahead. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for the opportunity. Members of the board, thank you. I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to speak. My name is Neil Jensen. I'm CEO of Cobra Valley Regional Medical Center in Globe, Arizona, home of the best Mexican food in Arizona. FairMC is a 25-bed critical access hospital serving the residents of southern Gila County and eastern Pinal County. And as a full-service facility, we operate 7 rural health clinics, provide comprehensive care, including primary care, but a level 4 ER, cardiac services, including cath lab, dialysis, oncology, urology, ENT, orthopedics, podiatry, neurosurgery, ophthalmology, wound care, and lastly, but not least, OBs and GYN services. I highlight that service because it's the most challenging service to staff and is significantly under-reimbursed. We're the only hospital in the region serving the OB community, and we've been actively seeking to fill this position almost 3 years. We finally identified an exceptional candidate, board certified from Mesa, Arizona, willing to relocate his family to Globe and commit to practicing at a rural hospital, which is a rarity these days. This provider has honorably served his country, maintains a clean professional record, no lawsuits, and comes with outstanding reference. Imagine my surprise and deep concern when he encountered insurmountable delays to obtain a license. In contrast, he secured a license in the state of Washington, in mere weeks. Dr. Bowers is a qualified practitioner and could practice anywhere in the nation and any community that he wanted to, but he wants to be in Globe. I respectfully urge the board to consider the broader implications of your decisions today. Rural Arizona deserves essential OB care, particularly amid the ongoing national crisis in maternal health and deserts and disparities in OB care. The outcome of this meeting could directly determine the availability to provide OB services in our communities and the San Carlos Apache Reservation, the communities that I proudly serve. Thank you for your time and your consideration. That'll end my comments.
Mr. Jensen, that was very concise and well said. I appreciate that. We had a second person, Mr. Yevitz.
Yes, the second person is Dr. Jody Daggett. He's chief of staff of Cobra Valley Regional Medical Center.
And is the doctor on?
Yeah, good morning. I'm pleased to talk to you about Dr. Bowers. The Medical Executive Committee reviewed Dr. Bowers' application packet, and we interviewed him at our meeting on September 16th. We questioned him extensively about the circumstances of his summary suspension that occurred while he's in the military. We were satisfied with his answers. The committee voted unanimously to recommend to our board of directors that the privileges requested be granted pending his licensure by the Arizona Osteopathic Board. We also asked him to agree to participate in a 6-month focused professional practice evaluation where his work will be reviewed by our most senior OBGYN and reported monthly to the MEC. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Daggett. I really appreciate you being here and for the service that you provide in your community. Thank you. Mr. Bohol, I believe we are on item 4 at this time.
That is correct.
I'd like a motion for the July 11th, 2025 open session. I think just with one abstention, Dr. Cunningham, if I remember correctly.
That's correct.
Do we have a motion?
I'll make a motion to accept the meeting as well as the executive session. Can I make a motion for both? As written.
Thank you. Do I have a second? Second from Mr. Goodman. Any discussion or amendments? Any opposed? All in favor of accepting as written? Aye.
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 Thank you very much. Okay, let's get back on track, Mr. Bohol. I think we're an hour and 15 minutes. Is everybody okay to continue?
Good. I'm good. Okay. If we'd like to move on to 6A, which is DO 250032A, James Beach, DO. I believe Dr. Beach has signed in to speak.
That would be just fine. Mr. Bohol, after Dr. Beach, let's plan on a 10 or 15 minute break, if we may.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you very much. Do I need to swear the doctor in?
Yes, please.
I would love to. Please go ahead.
Dr. Beach, will you please raise your right hand? Do you swear under penalty of perjury to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you very much, Dr. Beach, would you like to tell us just a little bit about your practice and how long you've been here?
Yeah, I've been in family medicine since 1976, pretty much at the same location for all but 4 years, and that's on 43rd Avenue, just south of Northern. I have a family practice. It's right now, we have three providers that see patients. We hold hours from 7 to 6, Monday through Friday, and Saturday 7 to noon. It's been a general family medicine, very community-oriented, and I see patients every day that I've been seeing, some of them 40-plus years.
That's amazing. Thank you very much. Mr. Bohol, would you like to tell us about this case?
Yes. This case was reviewed by a board-certified family practice physician. The background is that this involves patient PA, who's a female, age 75 at the first visit in 2021. Patient had a medical history of DVT, PE, morbid obesity, OSA, osteoarthritis, COPD, QHF, hypertension, diabetes, CKD, and PAD.
Mr. Bohol, to interrupt there. Dr. Beach, you have some background noise. Do you mind just muting while you're not speaking? I'd appreciate it. Thank you very much. I'm sorry, Mr. Bohol.
Okay. And patient was under the physician's care since April of 2021. The timeline of events includes December 9th, 2024. Patient visited physician for a follow-up and had blood drawn. The lab sheet indicated an undated note of recheck in 4 weeks, and later staff noted informed patient dated December 17th. On December 11th, 2024, lab results are posted to the patient portal as critical/abnormal. Labs showed markedly elevated liver enzymes. Patient alleges that between December 11th and the 23rd, that she repeatedly called the office. Office staff said that there were no results available and she told not to call again. The daughter requested the physician call her due to her concern over the abnormal portal results, and no call was returned. On December 17th, an order was entered for an abdominal ultrasound. No documented discussion with patient or family about this order. Patient alleges on December 24th that the daughter called again, upset about the unexplained ultrasound order and lack of communication on the labs. On January 1st, the patient's condition worsened. She was taken to the ER. CT scan revealed stage 4 bile duct cancer with acute pancreatitis, painless jaundice, adenocarcinoma, and liver lesions. She was admitted to the hospital. Patient alleges on January 6th, the daughter called again, insisted on speaking only with the physician. On January 10th, the patient was discharged to home hospice. On January 15th, daughter called the office regarding a form to be filled out by the physician and was noted by the office staff as rude. And then on December 17th, the patient passed away. The complainant alleges that she was repeatedly told that there were no results despite abnormal labs present in the portal. The physician's staff was unprofessional and rude and discouraged further calls. The physician did not return any calls until after January 17th, despite multiple urgent requests and critical labs. Patient alleges that when finally contacted, physician hung up after expressing condolences. Ultrasound was ordered without an explanation. The physician responded stating that he had reviewed the labs around December 11th and had the chart pulled on December 12th to relay the results to the patient. He asserts that staff called the patient on December 17th and ordered the abdominal ultrasound. He denies ever hanging up on the complainant. The deviations in the standard of care were noted to be a possible failure to notify the patient and or family in a timely manner about critical lab abnormalities, and possible failure to recognize jaundice in patient PA.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bohol. I appreciate it. Dr. Beach, would you care to comment on this case?
Sure. This is... It is an unfortunate case, but there's a couple of things that have been made to light here. One is it does seem like there was a delay in communication of the lab results. The laboratory that did the lab, they put the portal message up at 4 a.m. on the 11th. Generally, the lab, we get lab results in our reports three basic ways. One is from the lab itself through computer, through fax, and also through email. So the emails, of course, through the regular mail. And those go directly to me. The ones that come through fax are pulled and reviewed and acted on accordingly when those are received. The lab that came in was pulled, and we always pulled a chart of that lab too. We're still using paper, have not converted over to electronic medical records. But I reviewed it on the 11th or 12th, either one of those 2 days, made notation that I wanted to repeat it. The alkaline phosphatase was one of the liver tests that were abnormal, and that was markedly abnormal. The transaminases were just very mildly elevated, but they were different than the labs that I had done previous that year on the patient. So the patient's evaluation at the time of the visit on the 9th did not reveal, nor were there any complaints that revealed anything towards the abdominal cavity. There was a question of jaundice, which was not present. On the 9th, the bilirubin at that point was like 0.5. So there was no evident jaundice at that point. But then I was out of the office from the Thursday, which would have been the 12th, through the 16th. And then when I came back, the note that I had written on the lab was not communicated to the patient until I brought it back to the attention of the MAs on the 16th. And then the call was made on the 17th to them, as well as another order that I put down to get a ultrasound of the abdomen, which was never done. There's a couple things there. One is the sequence events of recognizing the lab and then communicating with the patients. And I've made a little corrective action, you know, to correct that with my medical assistants, so that things are done on the same day that I see them and review them. They will pull the faxes as they come in. And pull out the labs and collect them with the charts and give them to me that same day. And then I give them back and then those are communicated. The patient did call, the office many times. I see probably at least five or maybe six times. I spoke with her. It was on the 6th, not until later, as mentioned in the report. But at that time, she expressed some of her complaints about the rudeness, you know, and behavior of my office staff. And I had talks with the staff about the appropriate behavior on the phone. All the ones that she had mentioned had been with me for quite a long time, years. And this has not been a recurrent theme. So I'm not sure where that rudeness and abnormal behavior came in. And I have never hung up on a patient. I'll sometimes take calls, 10, 15 minutes or more, but I won't hang up until, they're satisfied and all the answers are done. I've tried to correct, what I see is, the potential problems here and to date, it's working so far. I hope we never have something like this again. It's no good for the patient and their family. The unfortunate outcome of this was unavoidable, but they still need to be aware of what there is and what the potentials are, so they can make their own preparations and seek appropriate care. So. I feel bad about that, but I'm trying to make sure that everything falls in order since then.
Thank you, Dr. Beach. I appreciate it. And I apologize. I normally ask before, but just to confirm, you do not have representation here? You don't have legal counsel here. Is that correct, Dr. Beach?
That's correct.
I'm sorry. I just like to confirm before. Before the board starts, I just have a couple of things here. Number one, I certainly agree with a total bilirubin of 5. I would not expect jaundice or icterus. I don't think that was a miss on your part. And
0.5.
0.5, yes, of course. Thank you very much. The two issues that I do see, obviously, I'll open this to the board, is one, a question of separating the timeliness of responding to an abnormal lab result, such as the liver function test. I personally am not convinced that this is a problem with painless or asymptomatic elevation of LFTs for the time frame of labs to order the ultrasound, but I'm an emergency medicine physician, so my perspective is different. So I'll obviously ask primary care physicians here for their opinion on that. But number two, I certainly do see a significant problem with timeliness of communication. That's a responsibility of you as the physician, Dr. Beach. It's okay to utilize medical assistance, but you are responsible for the medical assistance action. So those are my two primary venues of concern, but please, questions from the rest of the board?
I had a question, and Dr. Matem, I agree with you, and Dr. Beach is nice to see you again. I haven't seen you in a while. And I got to tell you, I rotated with that practice when I was a med student 1,000 years ago, Dr. Leonard, when he was around. But Dr. Beach, we know you've been in practice for a long time. You have a lot of experience and so forth. I think that things got slipped through your hands. And I'm going to tell you again, I agree with Dr. Matem that you can't rely upon the MAs. I know that, we get overwhelmed in the clinic with so many things to do, but the communication wasn't right with this. And I think the frustration why the daughter, wasn't the patient, it was the daughter that was calling all the time. And I had this happen too in my practice, is that they want some answers. And unfortunately, this was a bad outcome. I don't think that probably anything that you would do in the meantime would have made that difference. But I will say that I think if you could have given her communication, the daughter, they needed reassurance from you. They looked to you for that guidance. And then I feel like the ball was dropped on this. I really do, and unfortunately. And I think that even when you called her afterwards, it's not documented in the record what was said. I went back to look at that, what your conversation was with her, but clearly there wasn't a resolution of that. She was probably very frustrated and upset, which she probably had every right to do with the communication of the office. I know that if I had a patient that called and they were upset about their labs, I've had this happen before. It shows up in the portal before I even get it. And so then I look for it immediately, and we deal with it immediately. And so I know you don't have electronic medical records. I was looking at that. You don't have those, but clearly that's helping with our practice to be more responsive. But then also the just moving through this, not only with the labs, but also then to send a study for an ultrasound when there is no communication would be, again, alarming to the patient. Why am I having this done? It would be alarming to the family. Why am I having this? And then she ends up in the hospital, and they find out that she does have a cancer, and then you know, subsequently passes away. And so then the family has lost their trust in you as their physician, and also is frustrated and probably angry at you. And so I know you've had lots of years of experience, lots of patients you've taken care of over the years. I just really feel like this got out of hand. And so I'm happy to see that you are making some changes in your practice. And again, I would make sure that those changes, you can't rely upon the MAs. I mean, our MAs, even though they have been here a long, long time, and I have an MA that's worked with me for over 20 years, and I have another one that's worked with me for 5 years, they are not don't have the training that we have, and you understand that, doctor. And they don't understand when something is of urgency and when a family member is communicating the problems that they're having. And so this is where you step in, and this is part of the doctor-patient relationship. I'm saying this all for our med students that are listening on here, too. So in my opinion, you did fail to respond appropriately, and you didn't have good communication. And it looks like you're trying to improve upon that. So thank you for going through that. But that's my issues right there.
I agree.
Any further questions at the board? I apologize, Dr. Beach. Do you mind muting again when you're not talking? I don't know what your background noise is, but it's breaking in. Thank you. I'll go ahead, Dr. Chiffon, please.
Hi, Dr. Beach, and thank you. And I appreciate you practicing since 1976. I just wanted to have a little bit of a better understanding of your current practice and who's involved, how many patients you're seeing, if you're cutting back, if you're continuing, the support you have in the office. I just wanted to have a better understanding of, you know, the changes that you're making, if you're planning on converting to electronic records, if you're staying with paper records, just if you could just comment on, I know you said you had three people in your practice, is it two PAs and then medical assistants? If you could just give me a little more detail on some of that, please.
Okay. I am the only physician in the practice. I have two PAs that have been working with me for about 42 years combined. So we have three back office medical assistants. I have two telephone operators, two front office attendees, an insurance person, an office manager, and a clerk who does like filing and things. General practice, see anywhere from 20 to 30 patients a day, and have been doing that for the last 20 years at that rate. We've had a decline in our total practice volume since COVID, probably 20% or so decrease. The current state of affairs with electronic medical records, I'm probably going to leave them to whoever takes over the practice. I have not announce any type of retirement plans at this point. I have good physical and mental health, I think, and plan on keep practicing. I enjoy it. It's a very fulfilling part of my life that I feel like I've done a very good job in serving the public, and I couldn't be more satisfied. What else would you like to know? Sorry.
But as far you, so you said 20 to 30 patients you see a day with, and then two PAs. But you're seeing, so are you seeing? I know with family practice, not my specialty, but you're seeing a variety of different patients and complaints. And is there a scope that you're, as far as new patients or patients that you're seeing? Are you, you know, I know there's certainly a lot to keep up on with, as one practitioner in the office, and I just. You know, as far as that.
We accept new patients. I have cut down, you know, my workload. I used to work 4 days a week. Now I alternate 3 and 4. And so it has helped a little bit in terms of, you know, the amount of load that I have to do on weekends, because that's when I try to catch up on a lot of the paperwork and these annual wellnesses and everything we have to do. But, I've been general. I take care of, I did OB up until 2000 and, delivered, close to around 1,000 babies over the years. And then I was running to 4 different hospitals and then at 2000 I said, you know, I've got 2 kids that need me more at home, so I gave up all hospital work and just concentrated on office only at that point. And most of the patients I see now are geriatric. I would imagine that the average age is 70, you know, but they've been patients that have followed me, you know, for all this time. And don't see many kids at the office, very few, and so mostly an aging population.
Thank you, Dr. Beach. I appreciate all the, you know, the work you've been doing and continue to do. I think it's amazing to practice for all these years. You know, you're very experienced and intelligent human being. I would just encourage you to continue to evaluate, you know, your ability to take care of these patients and follow up and do what you can do and limit your practice if you're not able to meet those standards.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the board? If it's okay with the board, I'd like to make a motion to move to executive session for legal advice.
I second that.
Thank you. Any opposed? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
believe you have your board members present.
Thank you, Mr. Bohol. So if I can reiterate, I think there were, and let me back up a little bit. Obviously, this is an extremely unfortunate case. There was a diagnosis that was present. There were appropriate tests to find it. I'm not convinced that finding it within the a few days difference would have made a difference on outcome, which is why I was mentioning that the two major problems I saw were timeliness in responding to an abnormal test. From my perspective, obviously, as an emergency room physician, I do this real time, so I don't expect that of a primary care. I know you're juggling a lot of balls over days. And again, if I can emphasize, there was certainly a timeliness in communication with the patient and or a daughter in this case that is below the standard of care. So my concerns were ARS 32-1854, Chapter 6, engaging in a practice of medicine in a manner that harms or may harm a patient or that the board determines falls below the community standard of care. So under Chapter 6, I'm not convinced there was physical harm to the patient. There might have been some psychological stress of the patient and or daughter, but I still believe that the communication fell below the community standard of care. I'm not convinced Chapter 19, ARS 32-1854-19, committing any conduct or practice contrary to the recognized standards of ethics of the osteopathic medical profession was violated, but there's an argument for that as far as the communication with the patient. Under 20, any other provision in this chapter, ARS 32-1854-20, that would fall into my concern with 6. And under ARS 13-1854-34, exhibiting a lack of or inappropriate direction, collaboration, or supervision of licensed, certified, or registered healthcare provider or office personnel employee is certainly a concern, and I consider that to be below the standard of care. So part of the question is the degree of falling below the standard of care, if this would reach the level of a non-disciplinary letter of concern or if this is disciplinary. But I need the opinion of the board members for this. Were there any other concerns for the ARS violations or additions to what I said from the board?
I think you covered them all, Dr. Maidham.
Dr. Maidham, what about ARS 32-1803, the legibility of the records?
Yes, there's a question. However, he was transitioning from paper to written. I was actually able to read the salient points of those records. So, yes, you can certainly make a concern there, but I think by the standards changing, I was not going to mention that. I'm okay if you think that's a concern, though. I actually was able to capture the important points of that, that to my satisfaction, although I found it difficult. You're right.
Yeah, I felt that that was potentially a borderline issue. I could go either way on it, but I
I'm okay wanted to make sure that, yeah. That. No, that's okay with me either way. Other questions as far as the ARS standards?
I don't have any other questions at all. I just think I'd make a point that Dr. Beach has been in practice a long time. We don't see this doctor before the board. And I do believe in, I know Dr. Beach, it's hard for you to communicate to us that what you're trying to say, but it to me, it seems that you have made those corrections in your office. You're trying to make things better. And I think that you yourself feel probably just as bad about the outcome of the patient as what happened to. And I don't feel, this is my opinion, my only opinion, that I'm okay with a letter of concern for this doctor. Other board members may feel differently, but that's just my opinion.
I want your opinion. That's very important. And Dr. Chapin, you run an office too, although not the same type of practice. I really need your opinion. Thank you for raising your hand.
Sure. I agree. I don't think that this warrants a disciplinary action at this time, but I do think a letter of concern with non-disciplinary order for CMA specific to I guess record keeping. I don't know if there's patient communication in those in that realm would be warranted.
And Ms. Bichelle and Mr. Goodman, I'd really love your opinion from the perspective if you were advocating for your mother as far as what you would think about this.
I'm happy to say that I was initially very disturbed about this case. I was disturbed about the lack of communication and felt for the patient's family. Sorry about my dog. However, seeing the doctor's response, the doctor's demeanor, you're not blaming someone else for what's going on. I'm so sorry.
Oh, no, no.
You're okay.
Ms. Bichelle, we can't hear your dog. You're fine.
But I can't hear you now either.
Right, you're muted.
You got to unmute yourself, Ms. Bichelle. You're still muted. There you go.
There we go. I appreciate your response to the board, and as a result of all those things, I would be okay with a letter of concern.
Thank you.
And likewise for me, none of that is good, but oftentimes we get people who come before us and are not remorseful or are blaming others or not taking any accountability or a number of other things that make it difficult for us to understand that they're going to do better in the future. And I think a letter of concern is appropriate here because for all the reasons already mentioned.
Well, that's really, really important. Thank you very much, also, Mr. Goodman. That being said, I'd like to make a motion for a non-disciplinary letter of concerning, citing ARS 32, 18, 54, 6, 19, 20, 21, and 34 for reasons as discussed above.
I'll second that.
Thank you, Dr. Cunningham. I'm sorry, further comments there?
Can I add the non-disciplinary CME to the motion, please?
That was in the back of my thought. What are you thinking, Mr. Boho, what do you recommend for that?
In the past, you've done 10 hours for record keeping or 10 hours for patient communication. I believe there's a course provided by UC San Diego PACE that's 39 hours that covers both of those, if you'd like to recommend that one.
I would be fine with 10 hours covering both those subjects. I don't think this, I don't think we need PACE for this unless you think otherwise, Dr. Chapon.
No, I just wanted something that addresses both the patient, the documentation as well as the patient communication, though, if I can.
Thank you. Dr. Cunningham, are you okay with that addendum?
I think that's perfect. Thank you, Dr. Chapon.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Are there any opposed to the motion? All in favor, please indicate with an aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Thank you, everybody. And Dr. Beach, we really appreciate your decades of service to Arizona. I've heard many good things from your patients. I'm the very few patients of yours that I've seen in the emergency room. So thank you very much for what you do.
You're welcome, and thank you all for your input. I was wondering about on your agenda item 8E.
We'll get to that in a little bit here. I appreciate it.
Oh.
You're good. It's okay to ask, but we'll be there shortly.
Am I supposed to stay around for that? Because I haven't gotten any word, any letters of communication about this one.
You're welcome to stay on. It won't be long from now.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Bohan, do you want 10 or 15 minutes, or what would you like?
15 minutes would be great. Thank you.
Thank you very much to the board. If it's okay with everybody, let's take a 15-minute break.
Okay.
I apologize. We have a quorum except for me. I'm back.
No problem. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And where are we moving to next? Are we in item 8, Mr. Boho?
If we could go to item 7A, which is DO 2501 6A, Laura Gorski, believe the doctor and her attorney are signed in to speak.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Bohal, are you presenting this case?
Ms. Castro will provide the summary.
Ms. Castro, good to hear from you. Go ahead, please.
All right. Dr. Gorski has applied for licensure March 18th, 2025. On the application, Dr. Gorski answered no to question number 2 regarding disciplinary or adverse actions taken on a professional license. While processing the application, staff became aware that Dr. Gorski had a monetary penalty assessed to her license March 2004 by the Pennsylvania State Board of Osteopathic Medicine for failing to report to their board a notice of malpractice, which named the doctor as required by law in Pennsylvania. The monetary penalty was in the amount of $250. Dr. Gorski was later dismissed with prejudice from the malpractice case. Dr. Gorski stated this information was accidentally omitted from the application due to an oversight.
Perfect. Thank you very much. And Dr. Gorski, your representative is Ms. Peterson. Do I understand correctly?
Yes.
Oh, good. Would you like to speak first, Dr. Gorski, or your representative?
I'd like to give a statement if I can.
100%.
Okay. Okay. Thank you for the opportunity to address the board today regarding my pending license application. I want to begin by apologizing for not including my prior Pennsylvania board issue with my initial application. I was not aware what I thought was a $250 administrative fine was reportable discipline. I now understand that this should have been reported. I want to provide some background. The fine had nothing to do with my care of and my treatment of patients. I was named in a medical malpractice suit when I was a maternal fetal medicine fellow in Pennsylvania. I was under the supervision of an attending physician. After the birth, I heard nothing further regarding the matter, concluded my fellowship, and moved to Nevada for a new position. I have held the same position as a maternal fetal medicine specialist since then. After moving, I obtained a Nevada license, but did not maintain my Pennsylvania license, which expired in June of 2002. During my first 1 to 2 years in Nevada, I was notified that I'd been named in a medical malpractice suit with several other providers. I was deposed, but then later dismissed from the case, and my name was removed from the caption as I was not the attending physician and I did not pay any kind of settlement. I later received a letter from the Pennsylvania Board of Osteopathic Medicine fining me $250 for failing to report this lawsuit. However, as I had moved and believed that my Pennsylvania license had expired prior to the suit, I was unaware that I was required to inform the board. Nevertheless, I agreed to pay the fee, which I did, and as I discovered a small overlap between my Pennsylvania license, which was still active when I was named in the lawsuit. I was not represented by an attorney and sincerely believed that paying the administrative fee, not my license, was being disciplined such that I needed to report this licensing to my licensing application. Indeed, I was not even aware this incident was an issue until applying for my medical Arizona license. The omission was not intentional. I had full understanding. Had I fully understood my reporting requirements, I would have certainly listed this on my credentialing information. I was not represented by an attorney until very recently, and I had no intention of deceiving anyone, especially the board. I sincerely apologize for this oversight. I have no further board issues since 2004. My reputation in the Nevada community is that I'm a very experienced maternal fetal medicine specialist. I would respectfully request that you allow me to be licensed in Arizona. I can assure you that nothing like this will ever happen moving forward, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you have. Thank you.
That was perfect, Dr. Gorski. I appreciate it. Pardon my allergies. Ms. Peterson, would you like to say anything initially?
Just very brief. This is an application because Dr. Gorski plans to come to Arizona to provide her specialty, maternal fetal medicine, to underserved communities who don't have any of those specialists in the area. And so the plan they put into place, again, this is a great need that we have in Arizona. This is obviously not an issue to do with her care and treatment of patients, which has been exemplary in Nevada. And that, again, this oversight, again, I would have to take blame on the behalf of all attorneys, because I do believe the attorney who was initially retained, not when she was giving the information to sign, she had no representation at that time, but the reporting probably should have been done by the attorney once the lawsuit was filed. And so because after 25 years of credentialing, this has never come up before as an actual discipline, obviously Dr. Gorski was not intending to, honestly, legitimately did not know that this was an issue. And given all of the circumstances, we would very respectfully request that the board understand that this was a one-time oversight, not to be repeated, and grant her a license. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Peterson. I appreciate you being concise. So obviously, we take all of our Arizona revised statutes seriously. There can be some confusion with questions, but obviously, Dr. Gorski, you're responsible for filling out your application correctly. And to be helpful, it's there are contact numbers to get a hold of board staff. This is not a unique problem, though, Dr. Gorski, so you have my sympathy, but at the same time, depending on the nature and information available, sometimes this is punitive or disciplinary, and sometimes not. Mr. Bohol, or would you mind speaking a little bit to, just for the medical students and all of us, the physician's obligation to report?
Thank you. Yes. The application requirements do require full disclosure of any incidents involving criminal history, including anything that's expunged, disciplinary actions, complaints, open and pending investigations. And all of that is to provide not only the board, but board staff with a clear picture of the applicant's licensing history. It's with that information that we present cases like this to the board to make sure that the board is fully aware of who they're approving and issuing those licenses to. The mission of the board is to protect the public, and the board can't protect the public if we don't have all the relevant information about an applicant or their license history.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bohol. And I'm honest, that's information not just for you, Dr. Gorski, but to the rest of us in the medical schools also. So that being said, I really don't feel there was malice in this and would like to make a motion to grant you an unrestricted license in Arizona, unless there are any other questions or concerns from the board.
Only question is, Dr. Gorski, where are you going to practice? I'm curious.
Still in Nevada, still in Las Vegas.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, the practice, the reason for the Arizona license is that her practice, she'll be physically in Nevada, but there is a system they're putting into place in like Santan Valley and other remote areas where it's farther to drive into town. So the OBs will do the examination, will draw the labs, will do all this, and then she will appear remotely in consultation to provide advice as a maternal fetal medicine specialist to those OBs, so that these patients don't have to have these lengthy drives in to see other maternal medicine specialists. So she'll physically be in Nevada providing remote services here.
This was curious, very high tech. I don't have any issues, Dr. Maynham.
Thank you. Dr. Chabon,
thank you. I just wanted to second the motion to grant her unrestricted license.
Thank you very much. Any other questions or concerns from the board? Any opposed to the motion? All in favor, please indicate with an aye. Aye.
Aye.
Thank you very much. Welcome to being licensed in Arizona, and please feel free to be here physically as well as virtually.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. If we'd like to move on to 7B, this is application case number DO-250119A, Cyrus Bowers. I believe Dr. Bowers has signed in to speak as well as his attorney.
Perfect. Thank you very much. Would you like to present this case?
Hello.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, there we go. I'm going to have Ms. Castro provide the summary on the case.
Ms. Castro.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Dr. Bowers has applied for licensure February 2nd, 2025. On the application, Dr. Bowers disclosed that while stationed at a field hospital in Germany, a summary suspension was placed on his license for allegations of not meeting standard of care, inappropriate clinical documentation, and poor professionalism. The 28-day suspension occurred between June 2023 and July 2023. An investigation was conducted by the Air Force. The investigation notes that Dr. Bowers was placed on a focused professional practice evaluation with monitoring and evaluation on January 19th, 2023, followed by the quality assurance investigation on June 20th of 2023. The investigation was initiated upon receiving a score of unsatisfactory on more than half the monthly reports for the focused professional practice evaluation. The investigation included chart reviews, interviews, and witnesses, interview of witnesses, and all allegations were substantiated. The full investigative report is available for the board's review. The concluded recommendation was for a six-month temporary restriction on Dr. Bowers' privileges with monthly performance evaluations. Revocation was further recommended if allegations were unchanged based on the evaluation reports. Dr. Bowers states that the medical providers in the U.S. military are under the umbrella of the Defense of Health Agency. He further states that the DHA can summarily suspend credentials without due process up to 30 days, and it is not reportable to the National Practitioner Data Bank or other regulatory agencies. Dr. Bowers' privileges were fully restored March 22nd of 2024 with no reportable action taken. Dr. Bowers holds an active license in Nebraska and Washington, as well as an expired license in Oregon and Hawaii with no disciplinary action.
Ms. Galvin, did you have a procedural question or concern?
No, I believe Ms. Castro addressed it. I just wanted to be sure for the record and for the students that the summary suspension that he experienced in the military is something different than a licensing summary suspension that would be reported to our data bank. So I just wanted to make that clear.
Thank you, ma'am. I appreciate it. Dr. Bowers and Mr. Yavitz, if I'm not mutilating that yet, did one of you wish to speak first?
Dr. Matham, thank you. You pronounced it better the first time.
I did. I recognize it.
So let me take a couple of minutes because there's been some things we need to address. Let me put Dr. Bowers' application into context. Dr. Bowers grew up in Arizona. He got his medical degree in New York. He then joined the Army where he practiced as an OBGYN for the past 13 years. And in the past 13 years, he's had not one malpractice suit, not one adverse action. He successfully obtained licenses in four states, maintains two of those. And as the data bank report illustrates, he has a completely clean record. Now, Mr. Jensen spoke in the public session, and he said the hospital's been looking for an OBGYN who will move to Globe for years. Right now, the hospital relies on locum tenens. It's teetering on the edge. Many other local rural hospitals have canceled OB services, and this is the sole provider in Globe and at its seven clinics throughout Pinal and Gila County. Now, Dr. Daggett also talked in the public session, and he said that Dr. Bowers was granted full active staff membership and privileges at Cobra Valley Regional Medical Center earlier this week, subject to your licensure. Dr. Daggett told you that in order to address any lingering concerns from this investigative report, that Dr. Bowers will be subject to a concurrent review for 6 months, what's called a focused professional practice evaluation. And an FPPE, your students may be interested to know, it's not a restriction on privileges. but it does create a robust monitoring system to safeguard public safety. And I will say that Cobra Valley, despite its small size, is a leader in quality care. It's a teaching hospital. Its programs have been highlighted in the New York Times and CNN. Often it's the first hospital in the state to introduce new equipment. So Dr. Bowers provided you with multiple recommendations. They were excited, exuberant recommendations unqualified by MDs, DOs, nurses, and mid-levels. These people signed their names. They gave their numbers. So let me first discuss what Jeannie was talking about at first, which is summary suspension. And I'd like to contrast it to a suspension, because although it's confusing that they both use the word suspension, they're really night and day. They're very different. A summary suspension is triggered by a suspicion. It's essentially a timeout pending an investigation. I have been representing hospitals in the state in peer review for 45 years. We might summarily suspend a doctor based on a patient complaint, a nurse complaint, often a competing doctor's complaint. Once I recall, an ex-spouse made a complaint and we thought it serious enough to conduct an investigation. But it's a summary suspension is a railroad crossing. It's stop, look, and listen. Now let me contrast that to a full suspension. A suspension happens when a hospital brings formal written charges against a doctor. Both sides hire experts, and there's a full trial. And the trial is called a fair hearing. And some of the doctors have probably sat on fair hearing panels.
Mr. Yavitz, I apologize. You are eloquent, but could I ask the board a question real quick before you carry on?
Sure.
Just my question to the board is, I have absolutely no problems with accepting this applicant. Does anybody else? I've reviewed this case very thoroughly, and I'm very happy with the case materials presented, and I'm comfortable with granting this physician a license without further information. But if anybody has any questions, I don't mind hearing further. I know the attorney gets paid by the hours. I don't mean to interrupt that. But does anybody have any questions or concerns, or does anybody wish to hear more about this case?
Dr. Madam, I agree with you 100%. I fully support you if you decide to make a motion.
I would like to make a motion to grant an unrestricted license to Dr. Bowers, unless anybody else has any questions, concerns, or wishes to hear further.
I second that.
Are there any questions or concerns? Are there any opposed? All in favor, please indicate with an aye.
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 Aye. Dr. Bowers, I did not mean to take away your opportunity to speak. If you wish to say anything or contradict me, you may.
I certainly won't contradict you, but I am very grateful. I appreciate your time.
I really appreciate it. And to your attorney, whose name I tried so hard, I really apologize, but some information we need and some we don't. Thank you very much.
Dr. Madam, attorneys always love to hear themselves, but I appreciate your motions.
I'm aware of that. Thank you very much.
Dr. Madam, if I could just take a moment to add to Dr. Bowers, thank you for your service.
Thank you for your service, Dr. Bowers.
Welcome to Arizona, Doctor.
Thank you. Where would you like to move to next, Mr. Bohol?
If we can move to Section 8, which is the consent agenda. There are five cases listed on the consent agenda. All cases, you've been provided a copy of the consultant's report. And based on the allegations, we did not feel that these rose to the level of a deviation in standard of care or disciplinary action, but a letter of concern, which is non-disciplinary, was appropriate. And so if you accept the consent agenda, all five cases will be closed and issued a letter of concern for the potential violations as noted in the medical consultant's reports.
So if I can go back to the beginning of your statement there was a concern for violation, but did not raise the level of discipline. Is that correct, Mr. Bohol?
That's correct.
Thank you. Sorry, your grammar was a little confusing there.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
No problem. Any questions from the board?
None.
If not, I'll take a motion. And we can move on A through E unless there's anything anybody needs to separate.
I move to accept the consent agenda as presented.
Thank you, Mr. Joe.
Second that.
I have a motion and a second. If no further discussion, are there any opposed? All in favor, please indicate with an aye.
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 Thank you, everybody. Mr. Bohol, back to you.
I believe we're getting close to the end of this. We're taking care of 9, 10, and 11. If we'd like to do the board meeting calendar, and while we're doing the board meeting calendar, we can invite the students to join us.
Thank you. Please do. Okay. Everybody has the board meeting calendar in front of them, or in their board packet, I should say. I personally do not have any concerns, but go ahead, Mr. Bohol.
So we plan for 6 meetings next year. We'll do, again, the alternating schedule of a virtual meeting, in-person, then virtual. So the meetings scheduled would be Friday, January 30th, and that would be a virtual meeting. We would do in-person on March 28th. Then we would again have a virtual meeting on May 22nd, a in-person meeting on Saturday, July 18th, a virtual meeting on Friday, September 18th, and then a Saturday in-person meeting on November 14th, well before the holiday. So if there's no concerns, I would ask for approval of the calendar. We'll place it on the website and start making reservations for the rooms. Yes, Dr. Chabon.
I just had one potential suggestion. The live meeting on July 18th, if potentially that could be changed with the May or September one to a live and that moved to the Friday, that would be...
I'm not opposed to doing a virtual meeting in July and then making the September in person. That's fine with me.
I'm fine with
September
that.
Or May, either one. Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
I'm good either way. You need a motion, Mr. Bohol?
Yes, please. Thank you.
Make a motion with amendment as discussed.
I second that.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Any opposed? All in favor? Aye.
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 All right. If that, I believe, I'm not seeing the medical students joining yet, so we will move on to, I can quickly do my report, I believe.
Please, but not quickly. It's important, but please do.
Yeah. We'll move to item number 14. I'll pull my report up. We are still waiting for budget information due to the fiscal year-end closure. I expect to have those here shortly. I believe the fiscal year ended up closing on Tuesday, so the report should be generated very shortly. We completed several items this quarter. One thing that I definitely wanted to highlight was the creation of an API connection with our Interstate Medical Licensure Compact. This would allow for faster processing of compact renewals, as well as notification in our own system of applications for either new state of principal licensure or new requests for letters of qualification. So it'll be a much more direct access, so it'll speed up our process. We have closed 28 cases so far this fiscal year, with 17 that are ED dismissals. We currently have 254 open investigations. That number continues to drop as we get through any backlog that we have. And the other important highlight that I wanted to share was about the average time frame on processing applications or investigations. In 2023, we were at an average of 280 days. So far in 2024, we had been able to drop that down to 202. And as we close out cases from 2025, that number will grow, but it's currently at 124 days. So I do believe that we're getting very, very close to being under that 180 days through appropriate staffing and requests through the governor's office for additional staffing to address those concerns.
And if I could emphasize something there for you, Mr. Bohol, I'm sure the public is absolutely unaware of that, the public in this case being licensees, that we make a very active effort to improve processes for timely processing of applications and renewals. Our time frame for addressing complaints, I think, is impressive, and I'm pretty sure it has come down significantly over the last or the time I've been on this board, significantly since I've been on this board. And I think we're well ahead of the national standard, but we are confirming this because we're holding ourselves to the fire on this.
Yes.
Please keep going, Mr. Bohol.
And as our students are joining, we have been able to track that we had 272 students in attendance at the meetings over the last year, which is fantastic. And we have received 5,192 either emails or phone calls with applicants and licensees. So we are very proud of the work that we do here at the board. And my last item is the number of cases that were dismissed since the last meeting. I'm pulling that up now. And we had, I believe it was nine cases that were dismissed by the executive director since the last meeting. But with that, that concludes my report, and so I'm happy to turn that over to you to talk with the students.
Thank you very much. And just one item to add on at my discretion as the president. There have been, over the last several years, many scam attempts for positions using the medical board as a reference, using letterhead, printed licenses, signatures, etc. If there's ever a question, please take information from the caller, or if it's not a caller, then please contact or hold on to your response and contact the board via Mr. Bohol and staff for clarification. I received a very embarrassing phone call for a guy I played with a little bit too long yesterday who said he was from the board. While I was heading down that way, and I told him I'll see you in person in a few minutes or a couple hours, and he was not amused with me. So just please be savvy to our normal problems with that. And that being said, if the students can please turn on their cameras, we'd love to meet you all. So we take our chance to have our medical students participate very seriously. This is a very important and sometimes very boring part of your education, but there's a lot that goes on with the medical board, and there's a lot that goes on with physicians, so we really want a chance for you to learn. So if it's okay with the rest of the board, I'd like to start with asking the students if they have any questions. I'll have to caveat that with we can't answer questions about any specific cases, but we can answer questions that have to do with licensure and even about just being a physician, which I'm sure you'll all be very soon. Are there any questions from our medical students in attendance? Otherwise, Dr. Cunningham gets to quiz you. He's good at that.
I'm not going to quiz you, but welcome. You're the future of our DOs. We appreciate all the things that you're doing. And hopefully you got at least a glimpse of what we do as a board. And again, our mission is to take care of and to protect the public, as you had seen. I just wanted to say, and we had, and I don't want to comment about specific cases, but I always like to talk about it, and we didn't have a lot of those cases today, is about substance abuse and alcohol use. And so just want to pass on to you, remember that even if you have one drink, who do you call? Uber or somebody else, okay? Don't take that chance of having a DUI. And the reason is because that will follow you for the rest of your life. And also, as you saw some of the cases today, you have to report that then for the even all applicants, even when you're applying for insurances, getting on staffs at hospitals. And so if you do have a problem, this is the time to take care of it. And so if you know a friend or a colleague that's in your class that may have an issue, please talk to them. You may lose them as a friend, but if you get into practice and you do have an issue, then we do, you know, don't take that very lightly. The nice thing about this board is that if you do turn yourself in voluntarily, if you are in practice, we have a confidential physician monitoring board. But that's, you can't, it can't be the other way where you got a DUI or something like that and it comes before the board. So my advice to you is, if you have any issues along that line, please take care of that now. It may cost you a year in your schooling, but this is where you need to be focused, make sure that you're healthy, and any other things. But if you have any questions about that, please ask myself or Dr. Maynard or other board members. I wish you all the best in your education.
Thank you, Dr. Cunningham. Dr. Cunningham's been a primary care physician in a family practice for not four decades yet, is it? Or is it four decades?
37 years now.
37 years in Arizona. So thank you for your service. He's a wealth of knowledge. And you still take medical students, right?
Absolutely. I have one now.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, we do have somebody who raised their hand, student Dr. Samer. How do I say your last name?
Awad.
Awad? Oh, that's easier than it looks. Okay.
It does not look easy. That's for sure. So thank you for letting us attend the board meeting. It was definitely very educational. I was just wondering, something I felt kind of surprised by was, especially with a couple of those cases, like they having their application, and then pretty summarily you decide that, yes, they're good to have a license here. So I'm just wondering, how difficult is it overall to get licensed in the state? And then adding off of that, do you even need to be practicing in a state to like maintain a license there, or even have plans of practicing there in the immediate future?
Oh, that's a good question. I'll let Mr. Bohol comment on a lot of that. But let me qualify part of your question there on how difficult it is to get licensed. I would describe it as not difficult at all to get licensed. The question is if there were any red flags or concerns or reason that the board has to question, evaluate, or do something about a license. So basically the medical board's primary duty is protection of the public by upholding standards of training and standards of our profession. Summarizing our charter. But if you're not in violation of any of those points, then it's very easy and I think efficient to get a license. But Mr. Bohol, would you like to add? And then we'll go on to student Dr. Levan after that.
Yeah. the average time right now is about 86 days to get a license. But that includes some of the applicants that you were talking about, Dr. Maydam, that have require either board review or a lot more detailed review of their application. On simple applications, so that would be like individuals fresh out of residency, that have no criminal history, no disclosures of disciplinary actions, we can process those as quickly as close to 30 days. It all depends on how quickly we get the background check. That is usually the longest part of our process. But something that I could highlight that always helps the process, and this goes for, as you get farther down in your careers, something you should look at is the physician data center through the Federation of State Medical Boards. They are a repository for all of the all of your records. You can have your residency verifications, your transcripts, your exam scores, all that information provided. And when you apply for a license, you tell the PDC that you want your records sent to the licensing board. Licensing board receives it and is able to process your application much quicker. So when we get those, we can turn those around in a much more expedited fashion. It's particularly important if you have a residency program that ends up closing. We've had applicants before us that went in through a residency, and then 5 or 10 years later, that program closes, and we're unable to verify their residency then. If you do it pretty close to contemporaneously when you're applying for a license and that program's still open, it's easy to get that verification. But if you do it through the Federation of State Medical Boards and they have record of your program, that process becomes much easier and becomes that you know, permanent record for your application process. I'm happy to address any other questions about applications. I think I hit the big highlights. What I would always say is our staff is more than happy to speak with you, answer any questions. So please feel free to call the office. We're happy to chat.
And let me just expand with one other thing. Besides Mr. Bohol and Ms. Castro, and we have Mr. Dominic, one of our investigators, also online, although he did not have to speak up. We have a robust and getting more robust board staff getting work done in the background, which is why we can get through some of these cases efficiently. And there are some, obviously, we can't. But there's a lot of work that goes in the background and working with board staff to make the licensure and applications for licensures efficient. Ms. Student Dr. Levan, hi. Thanks for asking a question. What can we help you with?
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to ask about the letter of concern. I got a better idea today listening in what might prompt a letter of concern, but I wanted to know what the implications of that might be for somebody's practice or how that follows them.
I mean, again, I'll let Mr. Bohol speak, but you can think of it initially as there are some things that require discipline, and there are some things that require tracking. A letter of concern can be used for tracking that the board has addressed a concern, but there was not enough for us to believe that discipline was required. And this is something that, although it's available, it's not listed, I think, in the public documents, but can be requested, if I remember correctly, Mr. Bohol. So this is information that can be obtained, but is not visible to the public just with a cursory query. But would you like to expand on that, Mr. Bohol?
Absolutely. So the letter of concern is non-disciplinary. It's intended to be that quick reminder of, hey, if this conduct continues, it could lead to a violation. It could lead to an action that affects your license. So it's the board's attempt to just kind of provide a slight reminder of what the standard is and how to comply with that. It is a public document. However, it's not posted on the website. It's not reported anywhere. It just becomes part of the licensee's file, and that is maintained for 5 years. After that, it's no longer a public record. It's only available to the board as part of an investigative process. So if an individual had a letter of concern noting an issue, and then later on we get a second complaint or another complaint involving that same conduct, if the board found that they had violated the standard of care, they would be notified that a letter of concern does exist on this physician's history, and they were notified of this before, and the board may want to take what's called graduated discipline. So it's looking at, okay, what's the next step? We've warned you. Where do we go from here? But it's truly a non-punitive action, non-disciplinary, and not reported.
That was good, except I don't want to call it a slight reminder. I want to call it a significant reminder. Would that be fair, Mr. Bohol?
Thank you.
Because we take our board actions, even letters of concern, seriously. This is held in a public meeting. This is a conversation with the physician or the consent agendas are once they're discussed with the physician offline. But it's really important because as physicians, we can easily get siloed or not realize, especially in individual process, what medical care is changing around us. Just if I can ask the students overall a question, who thinks medical school is stressful? Raise hands. You think it's stressful? Who thinks it's going to get less stressful as you become interns, residents, and physicians? I just want to see if anybody would raise their hands on that one there. So like Dr. Cunningham said, we need you as physicians. You have chosen the most amazing career I think you can choose. We will do everything as physicians to help you succeed at what you're doing, because we as individuals definitely want you to succeed and to carry on. As a board, we're required to wear a different hat and protect and regulate. But personally, I could speak for the entire board. We want you to succeed. We want you to prosper. We want you to take care of patients. We want you to make a difference. But one of the things I personally see, and I certainly fell into this trap a little bit early in my career, is we become physicians, and that's all we are. And if all you are is a physician, God bless you, but you need to be able to live your life if you're going to be able to maintain your sanity and perform your job well. So as Dr. Cunningham was mentioning with seeking self-care and being careful, make sure that you're humans, make sure you have your resources, make sure you reach out. We seem to be taught that we can take care of ourselves, which is almost never true. Make sure you reach out when you need help. Do not fall into that, unfortunately, large percentage of people. I think we're about twice the public rate of suicide and substance abuse. Don't fall into that trap. It's most easy to break yourself if you take on all the stress of your job and do not use friends, family, dog, cat, hobbies, something, or and preferably a combination of all those things. Not dogs and cats if you're allergic, but I think you know what I mean. Please be human beings too. Be something besides a physician, but be the most amazing physicians that you can. Anything else from the rest of the board there? I know Dr. Chapin always has something to say. I'm going to call you out.
No, I think that was well said. I mean, understanding your limitations, understanding, your own mental health and willing to take a self-reflect from time to time, even not just as a student, but as you get into your first couple years of practice after residency. I mean, it continues to change and as you get older, the technology, changes, and that's certainly something to reflect on and family stresses and everything else. So just continue to evaluate your ability to care for yourself, because that affects your ability to care for your patients. And that's, what it's all about. So take some time. Hopefully you guys have the rest of the day off today to have some enjoyable time. I think we're going to give you back at least an hour, right? So,
well,
so do something. Yeah.
At least Kim and Madison appear to be in clinic right now, so I'm not sure how many people get the rest of the day.
Oh. Well, at least take the weekend. Enjoy. Have some, do things that you find enjoyable and that help, fill your cup, so to speak. So keep doing those things and keep evaluating how you're doing. So, and don't be afraid to ask for help with the board or anyone else.
Thank you, Dr. Chapin. While I have you on the line, let me say quickly that the board is consisting of physicians and public members. Public members have an equal vote and sway. This board is protecting the public, so obviously we need not just physician opinions, but as you heard me ask several times, our public members' opinions on a subject or its impact. Would Ms. Michelle or Mr. Goodman like to add anything?
I'm happy to. I think Ms. Michelle, you're muted as well. I will just add a plug on the substance abuse front. We have a lot of confidential resources available, things like that. I think as a past addict myself and as a professional, I personally believe that there's room, lots of room in the professional atmosphere to be more open about that and to discuss it more publicly and openly. And I think the more that we are all willing to do that, the higher the potential that we can help others who are struggling. It is often something that we will hide for lots of reasons, obviously. But at the professional front, or with your licensing at least, obviously disclosing that up front as soon as possible and seeking help is the right way to go. But also to, save a friend's life, I think being open about struggles, talking about those things, not being afraid to confront them directly is all generally good. Obviously, you know, use discretion where necessary or appropriate, be careful, those sorts of things. But if you see someone struggling, or if you're struggling yourself, talk to somebody or talk to them. It's better to have an uncomfortable moment with a friend at work than to find out that they overdosed tomorrow. We're all exposed to it. We all know somebody who's addicted or has struggled with addiction, and it's not going to go away. So, you know, my opinion and belief is that we should be open to talking about it as much as possible. So go on, do good work, be good people, don't do drugs. If you do, be careful.
We'll get help. Thank you very much, Mr. Goodman. I appreciate it. Ms. Pichelle, did you have something to add?
I just want to tell the students how impressed I am with their presence here. Thank you very much. It means a lot to the board. In my distant past, I worked in fields similar to Mr. Bohol and Ms. Castro, and we didn't have this for our applicants. I think it makes a huge difference. It's a lot of time out of your day, I know that. My real hope is that as a result of your being here today, we never see you again.
Except practicing. Thank you, Ms. Michelle. I appreciate it. So just one last recommendation from me, not to be somber, but we all make mistakes. And that's just because we're human. So we all make mistakes of varying degrees of severity. But it's really important to me to help you by saying when you make a mistake, own it. Don't bury it. It will never go away inside of you or outside. When you make a mistake, own it, deal with it, address it, and go through proper channels. And just realize that we are all learning, and we all are seeking to continually improve. We don't expect perfection. We just have standards. So thank you very much for all you students being on. Unless there's anything else, please sign off and do something besides listen to us for the rest of the day.
Good luck to you all.
Good luck, everybody. Thank you. Mr. Bohol, where would you like to move to next?
That concludes the totality of your agenda.
Is that the totality? That's amazing.
That's right.
Thank you very much to my board members and to board staff. We really appreciate your honest input and taking these cases seriously. So thank you, everybody. You guys have a fantastic day. If there's nothing else, I'd love a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Cunningham. Did I get a second on that yet?
I'll second.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Chiffon. Seeing no further discussion, are any opposed? I'm glad not. All in favor, aye.
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 Take care. Have a good weekend, everyone. Well done.
Thank you all.
See you in November.